Hello, and welcome to the Fast Fill. Fast Fill is a podcast series sponsored by Natural Gas Vehicles for America, the national organization dedicated to the development of a growing, profitable, and sustainable marketplace for vehicles powered by natural gas and biomethane, and for promoting the use of more natural gas in transportation. I'm your host, Dan Gage, president of NGV America. In this episode of the Fast Fill, we'll share another session from NGV21, our annual meeting and industry summit held recently in Phoenix, Arizona. Sponsored by Opal Fuels and moderated by Opal's co-CEO, Adam Kimura, this panel focuses on natural gas fleeting. Panelists include Marcus Lionetti, the Vice President of Operations for AJR Trucking, Lauren Matheson, Manager of Promotions and Public Relations for Matheson Trucking, Greg Reed, Executive Director of the National Star Route Mail Contractors Association, and Danny Sussdorf, Operations and Project Manager for National Ready Mix Concrete Company. Let's join their conversation now.
So the subject matter of this panel is what a fleet wants, what a fleet needs. I think fleet wants lower cost, better sustainability metrics, and the good news is everybody here has found the solution, and it's here today, and anybody that's listening in. So very excited to talk to the panel. Thank you all for joining us. Quick introduction on myself and who Opal Fuels is. I'm Adam Kimura, co-CEO of Opal Fuels. Opal Fuels brings together three organizations in the production and delivery of renewable natural gas as a transportation fuel, formerly Fortistar Methane, which captures and converts harmful methane emissions, turns it into renewable natural gas, and TruStar Energy, which hopefully some of you are familiar with, that builds cost-effective, reliable fueling infrastructure, delivering that renewable natural gas to fleets. A little bit more background on Opal Fuels. We'll be producing over 150 million gallons of RNG in the next 3 years from projects that we own and control. We have 8 in construction right now, another 16 in late-stage development. We've also built over 350 renewable natural gas fueling station projects. And we have a nationwide network of 70 service techs taking care of these stations on a 24/7 basis. We like to think of ourselves as a trusted and reliable partner in delivering renewable natural gas in cost-effective ways to our fleet customers. I think our last panel did a nice job talking about the sustainability benefits, which are terrific. You can achieve 100% Scope 1 emission reductions when you transition your fleet from diesel to renewable natural gas. And with that, I will allow my panelists to introduce themselves as well. Sure. And here's this for your slides.
So I think, are we on yet? There we are. So my name is Gregory Reed, and I'm the executive director of the National Star Route Mail Contractors Association. That's a mouthful, NSRMCA. I do not have a fleet at my disposal. I do not run a fleet. I'm up here because I hang out with some pretty incredible companies that do, including Matheson to my left and AJR Trucking to my left as well. The association is the trade association for transportation companies that contract with the United States Postal Service to move the mail regionally, nationally, even locally. And I'm here today not only because I get a chance to hang out with companies like Matheson and AJR Trucking, but because companies like them and other members of the Postal Service's supplier fleet are aggressively adopting CNG and RNG alternative fuel solutions, both because it makes good business sense, but also because it makes good environmental sense. And our client, the United States Postal Service, has sustainability goals that it's trying to reach and is looking to reach those through their contractor base and not just through their asset-owned fleet. And I'll hopefully get a chance to talk a little bit about what that relationship looks like and also how the diverse membership of the association and the postal contractor supplier base approaches CNG and RNG alternative fuel solutions.
Hi, I'm Lauren Matheson with Matheson Trucking, and we are a postal contractor, like Greg said. We do about 45 million miles a year. Currently, about 17 million of that is natural gas. We have new orders on the way. By then, we'll be doing about 50% natural gas miles, and we were early adopters, relatively. We started in 2012, and we did that because as a family business, both, I'm third generation, both previous generations are very innovative conscious. They wanted to innovate, they wanted to grow, and this is the way the world is headed. But most importantly, sustainability. We care about the environment, and the world is just a large scale home that we're meant to take care of for ourselves and also future generations. So we were really excited to get into that. Our customer loves it, and we're looking forward to growing further.
My name is Marcus Leonetti. I'm the VP of Operations for AJR Trucking. We are a U.S. postal contractor as well. We currently operate over 80 CNG tractors. That's 20% of our fleet. Our goal for second quarter of next year is to replace over half of our fleet with CNG tractors. Currently, we just broke ground on a station, and that is an RNG station. So our goal for the future is beyond zero. So we talk about net zero, but we're looking beyond zero when we introduce RNG into our fleet.
Hi, all. My name is Danny Sestorf. I'm a project manager for National Ready Mix. Just wanted to do a quick company overview of National Ready Mix. So we're a ready mix provider in the Ventura, Los Angeles, and Orange County. We operate 11 batch plants in that area. We pride ourselves on being a high-performance concrete specialist with a leader, being a leader in low-carbon options in the LA market. And we're actually the first to offer instant environmental product declarations, which I'm sure we'll go into a little bit more detail on. We have an internally and locally sourced cement plant out of Lebec, a concrete laboratory out of Ontario, and we actually own and operate the largest production facility at our Vernon location. We're part of the VCAC group of companies who's been family-owned and operated for over 165 years. The VCATs, they operate in 12 different countries. They own 16 cement plants, 70 aggregate plants, and 259 ready-mix plants. So a little bit about our fleet. We're pretty new to the alternative fuel space. We started converting June of last year. We converted 89 of our mixers, and the mixers, just so everybody knows, they're the ones with the rotating drum normally on the side of the freeway that you guys see. So we switched those over to Cummins 9-liter engines that have been performing great for us, and we went with Peterbilt 567 cabin chassis. And we switched out 28 of our tractors. Our tractors haul our raw materials, which is aggregate and cement. We went with Cummins 12-liter engines and Peterbilt 579 cabin chassis. And then on our stations, this is one of my passions. I really like CNG stations. I think it's interesting when you understand how it all works. We put our Vernon station into commission June of 2020, and it's been performing great, fueling that high production facility for us. Right now, we're in construction of our Irwindale site, so I'm a little bit panicky being here because I should be there. But I'll be driving back tomorrow to check in on them. And then we have two projects under permit at Santa Clarita and Glendale, and it's all 100% RNG fueled by TruStar Energy.
Great. So I've got a couple of questions to kick it off, and then I'm sure there are going to be some questions from the audience as well. So the first I would throw out to the panel is, what prompted your decision to look into using alternative fuels or non-diesel engines? What prompted it?
For us personally, that's clearly the way the world is headed. There's been some fits and starts, I think, but I think we're seeing in the world today, you have to innovate. And like I said, sustainability is where it's at. If you can take care at the same time as doing the job effectively, all the better. And in our company, we do always try to look ahead, see what's next, and get ahead of the curve there.
Right. So that was more of an internal philosophy to improve sustainability metrics
Most definitely.
Right. Okay. Anybody feel pressures from either customers, marketplace, keeping up with what other people might be doing?
Yeah. So for us, it was kind of twofold. Part of our fleet was about to be phased out due to California truck and bus regulations. So we started looking into the three fuels and really felt like CNG fit our operations best. So, yeah, that was a different reason why we went with it.
Yeah, ours was strictly environmental. I think we forget about the key element, the driver. That's what allows us to get product from point A to point B. And when you really look at the driver and the amount of idle time that they experience, you know, on average, we could be 2 hours. And in the port of one of our sister companies can be up to 4 hours. Well, that emissions coming up into the cab, you know, can be very damaging. I don't think we talk about that enough. So it's really providing a clean working environment for the driver.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I hadn't heard that before. That is interesting. What other technologies did you explore before you settled on natural gas or renewable natural gas?
We looked at LNG for a while. At the time, the infrastructure just wasn't enough for us. The only viable option at the time was CNG, and so that's kind of where we've headed. As we've gotten further, we're starting to look at RNG, and we're excited about the prospect of that as our particular product allows. But so far, it's been CNG that's worked really well for us.
Got it.
Yeah, I mean, for us, we looked at all three. So we looked at electric, hydrogen, and CNG. Electric, our haulers on average, you know, depending on if they're single shift or double shift, they're around, you know, 600 to 800 miles. So we really didn't feel super confident that the electric battery range was going to be able to hit those numbers for us. And then in addition, just battery weights, you know, we didn't want to offset our payload. And then with hydrogen, just don't feel like the technology is quite there and the cost of infrastructure is really high. So that kind of deterred us from it. But CNG fueled with RNG gave us that price stability that we felt comfort with, and it really fit our operations well.
Yeah, for us, we also have two EVs in our fleet currently today, but range was a big issue. For us, and it continues to be a challenge today. I think the technology will get better, and as that does get better, infrastructure grows, that might be an option, but CNG made a lot of sense, a lot of proven miles behind CNG, and the way we spec our trucks, we can do over 680 miles with one fill, so.
And from like the postal contractor perspective, CNG is the optimized solution for a Class A truck. Postal contractors run light, so they don't have the same challenges that CNG fuel trucks have had in the past, particularly before the technology has gotten better. So there's not an issue of power there. And then also it's a real benefit for postal contractors running these long-haul routes like Matheson, like AJR Trucking, is that they are dedicated routes. They go the same route all the time. They're not variable like you see in the freight market. So long as you can establish a refueling sort of pathway to whatever your ultimate destination is, there's a reliable consumption that can happen day in and day out. That's to the benefit, of course, to the fuel supplier. There's also great stability and confidence on the trucking side as well.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. And I know we've touched upon this already, but maybe we can dive a little bit deeper on your experiences so far. What have you found the cost of your operations when you switched from diesel over to either CNG, RNG combination? What has been the performance of the trucks? What has been driver satisfaction or dissatisfaction, although I know which that one might go to, and your fueling experiences? So if you could just touch on any of those kind of topics, I think that would be helpful.
I think with any major change implemented, there's going to be challenges, naturally, real and perceived. I think it was really important to us as we got into it, just mainly train everybody, overtrain everybody, we took advantage of training opportunities with Cummins, Hexagon Agility. We've worked closely with both of them, trained the drivers, trained the mechanics, and it actually has ended up being a really good recruitment tool for us. They enjoy it. They like not dealing with diesel and diesel exhaust. And again, our customer, the Postal Service, likes working with a company that's green and sustainable and working toward that in the future. But drivers, mechanics, operators all want to work for a company that has, you know, good morals. They're doing this for the right reasons, kind of like taking care of the drivers in the cab. I mean, it's all the same. Everybody, I think most people have that goal. As long as it's available, they want to be a part of that. So we really took advantage of that and did the training. As far as fueling, we just learned early on with long haul, we carried more gallons than a lot of other people in the very beginning, and that worked out well for us. It's just, we run our routes down to the minute. So as with anything in our business, and I think AJR would be similar, by the minute means you plan down to the second, basically. And so as long as you approach the whole change with that in mind, I think it works out well. It has for us.
Just one quick follow-up there. You know, we always think about ESG, you know, helping out on the E part, the environmental and the sustainability part. But you're touching on something else with for the employees and the drivers where it really can improve the social or the governance aspect in S&G. Have you seen any metrics to point to where, you know, the drivers, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but it's just a new concept I hadn't been thinking about quite as much. Have you seen any metrics with the drivers that are driving, you know, the natural gas or the CNG part of your fleets having lower turnover or higher retention rates versus, you know, perhaps the parts of your fleets that are still on diesel? Or do you see anything that along those lines?
Nothing concrete numbers wise, but we hear it when we're out in the field, you know, chatting with people, checking up.
Yeah, I mean, I like to tell a funny story. We got a call from a driver's wife saying, "Hey, did my husband go to work today?" And yeah, of course. He did a great job. He's one of our key employees. Well, he doesn't smell like diesel anymore. So I've been curious to know if he's still showing up to work. So you know, we really like to tell the story because it is a success story, right? The technology works. It makes sense. You know, and that's what I like to share with everybody. It really comes down to education. And like Matheson, we do a lot of driver training. We train them before they get in the truck. We want to make sure they have a positive experience, right? That's key. That's key to the acceptance of this technology.
Yeah, I mean, for us, we were fortunate enough to get a bunch of new trucks, and what drivers don't love new trucks? So it had a bunch of new technology that they were very excited about. And then with the way that we've set up our sites, we put in a dedicated slow fill post for every truck. So at the end of the day, our drivers will drive in, plug in, leave, our compressors will kick on in off peak hours, fuel them up, and then they'll start their day with the full tank. So yeah, it's been a big win for us.
Right. And have the cost played out as you had thought after deploying the trucks? And I know you guys have had different experiences in terms of coming in earlier or later.
I mean, yeah, it's been as expected. It was a pretty smooth transition, and I mean, it definitely wasn't all National Ready Mix. We had great partners, you know, with Cummins, Rush, Hexagon Agility, Momentum, amongst, you know, a bunch of others, TruStar, Ozinga. So yeah, it was a smooth transition, and the cost savings have been good.
Yeah, early on, we partnered with Cummins to mainly understand the service cycles of the truck. It does require you to service it a little more often than you would a diesel. But understanding that early on, building that into the cost, it becomes more a predictable cost. I think when you add a fuel price into that predictive cost, it starts to make a lot of sense over time.
Mm-hmm. Terrific, and I think we some of you touched upon this as well in your earlier comments about what your thoughts are looking forward, whether or not you're going to continue to deploy natural gas within your fleets. Are you looking at other technologies as well to layer in, or just what's the outlook? How are you planning to either continue with your programs or evaluate other technologies?
We have 40 new trucks ordered. They'll be in next year. We do plan to continue, and we've always got our ear to the ground for what else? What else can we be doing? And so I think that's definitely the attitude with which we've approached it. So far, this is working out really well for us, as long as infrastructure and ROI allows, which it has so far. We'd like to continue and be all natural gas. If that becomes something else, if one day it's hydrogen like that, then, you know, we'll look at that in time. But so far, I think we'd like to continue this current trajectory. We're excited about Cummins' new 15-liter engine, but so far, that's where we're headed.
We are too.
We're actually at an interesting spot in our fleet. So 50% of our fleet's CNG, 50% is diesel. On the diesel side, we're 2015 or newer. So if financial incentives were available, we'd definitely consider switching, you know, those trucks to CNG trucks. But yeah, if those incentives were there, we would for sure do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What advice would you give to fleets thinking about trying out renewable natural gas or natural gas trucks?
You know, I would say reaching out to somebody that uses it on a daily basis. Partnering with the OEMs is key. Specking a truck you can grow into, not a truck you're going to grow out of. I think that's a big mistake that a lot of fleets make early on. And that can impact their experience dramatically. So I think that's the key, is really specking a truck that you can grow into.
I can't talk enough about training and education. Mm-hmm. Again, partner with your fuel system supplier, partner with your people and tell them, hey, this is why we're doing this. Mm-hmm. This is why we're training you here. This is how it's going to look, you know, X amount of years down the road.
And this one also, maybe, Greg, you may have some thoughts on this one as well. Are you using your alternative fuels in a way to gain market share, gain business? Are you using it and proactively to not only, obviously, reduce costs and improve driver satisfaction, and also do all our parts to help stop climate change? Are you using it proactively to win business, and how are you doing that?
So we're in an interesting place right now with the United States Postal Service because it's just the most complex supply chain in the world. Just for point of perspective, because I think we take for granted how complex it is, the United States Postal Service handles 43% of the world's mail volume. Which means it has a tremendous amount of vehicles on the road and has real sustainability and environmental goals that it's trying to achieve. At the same time, though, it's also about moving the mail efficiently and affordably. So while there are instances, and certainly there are companies out there who are getting pressure from their clients to put forward a sustainability goal from a carrier perspective, we have that, and that is a selling point where we can say we're helping you achieve it. But it's also it travels the other way, too. So our association, our members of our association, are also educating the Postal Service. So they are trying to find their way to their sustainability goals. They don't necessarily have hard mandates as they navigate that, but Matheson, AJR Trucking can demonstrate not only that they can run more effectively, more affordably, but they also can help achieve those goals. So it becomes more of a conversation rather than a condition of contract or something that is forced upon our members. And working with them, we are hopefully going to achieve new sort of concessions that allow contracts supported by alternative fuel solutions to be more attractive over the long haul for our members and other postal contractors.
Our owners, the VCAS, they had a company-wide commitment to lower their carbon footprint. So when we brought up this idea to do the switch to RNG, they were totally on board. And then our customers, you know, specifically engineers and architects, they're being pressured right now to come up with lower carbon solutions for buildings, projects, highways, you know, of the like. So being able to offer RNG for our raw materials movement allows us to reduce the carbon content of our product through an environmental product declaration. So definitely helps. It's kind of a buzz in the construction industry right now, you know, so we're trying to clearly communicate with them with our instant EPDs.
Yeah, remind me, we have some carbon capture technology to talk to you about for your cement plants. Any other ways that you guys are seeing this as a marketing benefit, way to win new business?
Yeah, we have a handful of customers that specifically ask for CNG trucks. The reason is some of the cities that they operate in are mandating that. So I think it's going to be a part of the future now, you know, really with the Port of Los Angeles that we also operate in. They have a lot of mandates for clean technology. A lot of cities and counties are, you know, really going near zero or zero emissions. So it is an opportunity for us to at least take that product offering to our customers and say, hey, look, we're already there, and we have a good plan in place.
Yeah, we're kind of in a similar position as AGR Trucking with the ports.
I think USPS would like to be, well, for Matheson and USPS, like Greg said, it's more of like a collaborative than a conditional. Mm-hmm. I think they can see that this is where we need to be as well, and so it's been handy that it's collaborative, but definitely not conditional.
I mean, we hear it all the time. Shippers, when they're purchasing logistics or transportation, they always want to try and make sure that they are getting the most sustainable transportation and logistics. And you know, it does seem like it's an enormous opportunity for fleets when they convert over to, you know, maybe change some of the ways that they're doing business. Maybe they can get longer term contracts because they're making investments in those alternative trucks. And you know, maybe there are ways to structure around those diesel fuel surcharges and that sort of thing. So seems like an opportunity for fleets to creatively figure out ways to strengthen their business when they make investments in these kinds of technologies. I want to be respectful of time and make sure we've got time for the audience out there. So, Dan, I don't know if we've got actually, I saw people just standing up before. We can either circulate a mic or... Sorry, I didn't mean to catch you off guard there.
I have a quick question, though, for Greg, because I want to specifically ask you that while I cue a question. So Greg invited me in August to come out to his show in Indianapolis and talk a little bit about CNG products to your members. What is your advice to some of the folks in the room here? You're with Lauren and Marcus. You know, their companies have been at the forefront in your industry. What are some of the things that these folks should know about some of the players who haven't made that move? And because of whatever hesitancy it is, range, reliability, maintenance, fueling questions, what are some of the advice you could give to folks in this room and how to approach some of those folks and get them to start thinking along the lines of Lauren's company and Marcus's?
Sure, and I appreciate that question, Dan, and this kind of nicely dovetails with the last presentation. The biggest obstacle for adoption, even among large trucking companies with hundreds of millions of dollars in postal service contracts, is the fear of the unknown. And they really do rely upon the partnerships, the education, the hand-holding in making this transition. Matheson and AJR have been at it for some time and are super sophisticated, but even they have talked here today about the importance of those partnerships and educating someone about what that looks like. So we have worked closely with Clean Energy. We'll be working closely with Shell and Hexagon Agility going forward to provide that level of support. And it's particularly true of postal contracting, which can be a little bit, as you know, trucking can be slow to adopt new innovations. Generally, postal contractors can be even slower. But at the same time, the Postal Service is diversifying its fleet and inviting in what we would call, you know, non-traditional postal contractors, some of the largest trucking companies in the country. But nevertheless, everybody needs that level of individualized support. And that's where we've seen the most traction. Is when you're meeting on that one-on-one level and you're mapping out what does adoption look like over the next sort of year and a half from an infrastructure perspective, a truck spec perspective, a purchase perspective, and a maintenance perspective. But I mean, Matheson and AJR could tell you all about that because they've built great relationships that have helped them sort of be at the cutting edge of CNG and now RNG adoption in a way that's truly exciting. And they've also been able to demonstrate it without being the largest trucking companies in the world or in the country. I mean, it's one thing if we're talking about UPS adoption, and that's exciting, and obviously it's a great company. But, you know, Matheson and AJR are successful large companies, and yet they are, you know, sort of more aggressively taking these steps to the benefit of their local community than some of the companies that we often look to as examples of excellence in trucking. And it's because of their partnerships.
So I've got two tractors. I have a Volvo and a Freightliner. Bought them both used. And I bought them from somebody that didn't have a good experience. And I stole these trucks, basically, on value. How are you factoring in the resale of your trucks when they've aged out of your fleet?
We don't have much occasion for resale in our experience so far. Maybe as we continue on, I could look into it. We could connect. That hasn't been an issue for us so far. We pretty much run our trucks and run them and run them and run them.
Thank you. And I'll add to what Tom said. Actually, we have purchased over 600 of these natural gas trucks that were not liked or did not make the first score. The question I have for you, we are new in the postal business. We are operating 50 natural gas trucks today. And when we went into the bidding process, it was disheartening to see that the post office did not have any points for running alternative fuel. What are you going to do as association to change that?
Fieri, what are you doing? You're surprising me here on the stage? So let me phrase it this way. I think the real question is, what are we all going to do to educate one of the largest purchasers of transportation services in the country? So just some additional metrics. The Postal Service spend every year is $82.2 billion, and their revenue is about $73.1 billion. They spend about 10% of that on contracting. Between $8 and $10 billion they contract. Some of that is in air. Some of that is sort of like HP, cloud services, consulting contracting. A lot of that is in trucking, right? And so we are in this conversation, this education about how do we help our client achieve its sustainability goals. But that's a conversation that Clean Energy also has with the Postal Service when they come to our association's events and as we create opportunities and platforms to connect with the Postal Service. That's the sort of thing that many, you know, a trade association, NGV America, the NSRMCA should be doing, is be creating a platform for all of us, whether we're a fuel provider, an equipment provider, or ultimately a trucking company, to educate our client, in this case, the Postal Service, about how we can help them achieve their goals, both economically and also environmentally. And we're getting there. In the past, for example, the Postal Service has awarded longer contracts for people who are utilizing a CNG solution, recognizing that there was upfront investment that needed to kind of be returned over time. But even moving beyond that, the Postal Service is taking seriously its sustainability goals, and they're going to have to provide that sort of accommodation and that consideration. And we're eager not only to work with our members and contractors, but also to work with our sort of sponsors, our exhibitors, our suppliers, to have that really comprehensive conversation. We should have invited the Postal Service here. They would have loved to hear the presentations thus far and learned about the value of CNG, because I think in large part they can be in the dark. But that's just specific to the Postal Service.
So this is a question probably for Danny, since you said your motivation was driven primarily by regulation. Do you feel like CNG and LNG and, or I'm sorry, RNG offers you that long-term regulatory pathway, or because of sort of the uncertainty around CARB, do you still feel like there is a potential down the road that things may change and that you might have to take a different approach?
No, I mean, we're definitely hopeful CARB's going to catch the buzz. With CNG fueled by RNG, we have been tracking our carbon reduction and illustrating it. And then, like I was saying, in our environmental product declarations, they kind of speak for themselves. So we've gotten our first year's worth of data to actually pump in to our EPDs to show that carbon reduction. And I really feel after next year, when we have the whole fleet running the entire year, you're really going to see that CI score drop down, and hopefully that'll kind of tell the story to CARB, you know, that we are making a good push towards reducing the carbon footprint of our product.
I've got a question, probably most for Lauren and let's see, Marcus. Yeah, you guys mentioned about the maintenance intervals on CNG being a little bit different. How were the overhaul intervals? I mean, have you gotten, you know, similar life to the diesels, mid-range overhauls, million miles, anything like that?
Yeah, we haven't gotten close to a million miles yet, but we are assured by the OEMs that they can definitely achieve that. When we look at the service intervals, you know, we had to do a lot of homework, but one thing we learned is everything is based on hours. So our key goal was to pair the spark plug and the oil change and meet those two together at 1,000 hours. When we did that, we then took it a step further. We introduced a new oil into our fleet with Valvoline, and that was also a recommendation that Cummins made. So, you know, there's a substantial difference on the maintenance, but it's key that you understand it. So, and that's the approach that we took.
Yeah, I think you just made Eric's day, the pitch from Valvoline. Thanks.
Yeah, I was going to say that sounded like it was teed up, but no, we're a Valvoline customer, and yeah, it's been a good partnership with Cummins and Valvoline.
I would echo that as well. Again, it like I said, fits and starts in the beginning. As we've continued on, we're fully confident in the longevity, if done right.
First of all, thank you to the panel for all being here. It's really great to hear from the actual end users in the fleets. I have a question for anyone on the panel, but you all mentioned that you all use CNG and it was, you know, really chosen to be that cost savings kind of fuel. But as you all mentioned, like training and, you know, making your staff aware, those are all key crucial parts as well. So my question is, you know, with cost savings in mind and with fuel costs rising and fluctuating between diesel and CNG, what are some of the, I guess, challenges that you face on a day-to-day scale when you're seeing the CNG and diesel trucks? And what makes you want to continue using those CNGs and pushing for that when there are so many things that fluctuate between the two fuels and really create that battle? But at the end of the day, you know, you want CNG to do well because you're trying to promote your relationships and your businesses, but just want to hear from anyone who has perspective on that.
So we're all kind of experiencing the diesel price increase, and just keeping tabs on the CNG market, natural gas market. It's readily available through EIA.gov, so we kind of track, you know, both forecasts for future years. And yeah, just price stability on the CNG end, it's very apparent.
Yeah, I'm just going to step in there for 1 second. Danny's lucky enough to be in California. So if any of you have operations in California, disparity between RNGs and transportation fuel and diesel is massive. I don't think you would worry about slight fluctuations in diesel price considering what you're paying for your RNG fuel in California. Still good outside of California as well. So don't want to scare anybody off, but I'm just saying, specifically in California, with where diesel prices are and taxes, and it's really that LCFS program where diesel consumers are actually paying into the LCFS program, and companies such as ours are taking the money from the LCFS credits that we're generating from renewable natural gas and giving it over to the fleets that actually do convert over. It's a direct transfer in California between diesel payers paying in and it being rebated out to the fleets that are that have made the transition. Sorry to step in there.
I just want to echo something that was brought up earlier regarding sort of what is the future of diesel, and it was, yes, in the context of CARB, but CARB is CARB is not California exclusive, right? So if CARB has its way, regardless of how aggressive it pursues the phase out of diesel or the electrification mandate that it's currently considering, it's almost guaranteed you'll see that be deployed, that scatter across about 14 states across the country, and not even just your traditional sort of, if you will, liberal states. So including North Carolina, including Pennsylvania. And so, yes, there are price fluctuations, although you have price stability with RNG and CNG in a way you don't with diesel, and there's value to be had there. But it's also how long are you going to wait until you're forced out of diesel? Or when are you going to actually strategically make the investment towards a renewable alternative fuel solution like RNG and CNG so that you're prepared to weather what is coming in a matter of time? And the question is how long is that going to take to arrive? And I wouldn't gamble on that. I think it's time to start thinking about that now.
I think the South Coast Air Board put out an interesting letter. I don't know if we've circulated that around or if people have taken a peek at it. I think it's pretty interesting reading when you're looking at the best ways to decarbonize from the transportation sector. You know, we as producers of renewable natural gas have lots of different end markets that we can sell the product into. You know, utility markets are starting to get more interested in it. You know, industrial users want to use it to decarbonize their operations. But we're really most excited about the transportation fuel market. You know, the two biggest climate crises we have are fugitive methane emissions, according to the UN report and most studies out there. And the second biggest climate crisis are emissions from the transportation sector, accounting for 30%. And with renewable natural gas, we're able to solve both of those issues with one product. And, you know, I just think it's amazing, too, that we have a product that works economically and operationally and for other reasons for drivers as well. So, you know, we're sort of, you know, maybe people weren't as focused on it before they had their own ESG mandates and that sort of thing, even though the product has been here and working. So I would just... I think it's a great opportunity for fleets that maybe are considering it and something that can be deployed today.
Thank you to AJR Trucking, Matheson Trucking, the National Star Route Mail Contractors Association, and the National Ready Mix Concrete Company for their comments, insight, and experiences transitioning to affordable net zero RNG fuel vehicles. And thanks to Opal Fuels and Adam Kimura for leading the discussion. To find out more about our recent NGV21 program, go to our annual show's website at ngvshow.com. For more information on NGV America, visit our website at ngvamerica.org. There you can sign up for our weekly newsletter. Share comments with us on today's podcast via email at info@ngvamerica.org. And be sure to follow us on all your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. On behalf of Opal Fuels, its CEO Adam Kimura, our panelists, and the entire NGV America team, I'm Dan Gage. Thanks again for joining us. You just experienced the Fast Bill. Until next time.